Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. It's a signal of our times, perhaps, that as Big Shot Network anchor Brian Williams slinks back to cable news this month, a giant of cable says goodbye tonight, taking with him the credibility, stature, journalistic integrity, and power to change the national discourse that today's network anchors can only dream of, and that is associated with the likes of David Brinkley, Walter Cronkite, Peter Jennings, and Edward R. Murrow. He is, of course, the very laughable Jon Stewart.
Welcome! Welcome, welcome to The Daily Show. Craig Kilborn is on assignment in Kuala Lumpur. I'm Jon Stewart. Coming up on today's show, Stephen Colbert with the latest analysis out of Washington. Beth Littleford interviews the original Munchkins. And Michael J. Fox is my first guest, and he's a nice man for doing it. But first, let the healing begin. It's headlines.
The year was 1999, and an impeached President Bill Clinton was in office when Jon Stewart took over the reins of The Daily Show. Clinton and his congressional enemies made for a comedy goldmine.
You're out of order. He's out of order. This whole trial is sexy. President Clinton's historic impeachment trial begins Thursday, and the most important issue facing the United States Senate is how can it take a pointless, tawdry trial, whose outcome has already been decided, and make it last 6 hilarious, humiliating months.
But Stewart found comedy in more than just Bill Clinton, and he goes out tonight with Donald Trump leading the field of GOP presidential candidates, something Stewart's writers couldn't have dreamed of 16 years ago. In the intervening years, Stewart's Daily Show has grown to be the it place to be seen, smeared, pilloried, held accountable, and even celebrated sometimes.
Mr. Bill O'Reilly!
Senator Elizabeth Warren!
Tim Geithner!
Mike Huckabee!
President Bill Clinton!
King Abdullah II!
Christine Lagarde!
President Barack Obama! Let's go!
Peter Munsing in Wyonissing, Pennsylvania will certainly miss him. John, you got people interested in governance to think about policy and society and more than stereotypes, to consider humor rather than anger, and to ask questions about soundbite media. And you'll always have our respect for the care and respect you gave to your work by not going shallow, for having humor that is considered. Stewart's fusing of entertainment and news did the opposite of dumbing down and sexing up the criticism of the mainstream news media, as Stewart, the growth of the internet, and even Fox News showed that with a point of view, audiences got a fresh interest in current events. Brooke Gladstone, host of On the Media, says what Stewart said at the peak of his power could not be ignored by politicians, corporations, and other powerful figures in American civic life.
When there was the famous poll among millennials that determined that Jon Stewart was the most trusted man in television, well, compare him to an earlier poll in the 70s when Walter Cronkite was, and you see there's a sensibility there that really changed, and it changed because of the internet, where being objective and speaking from on high now became unworthy of trust, whereas being down to earth and expressing what you really felt built trust, and that's a totally different paradigm.
Stewart also understood how people absorb the news in a way that traditional media outlets, I don't think, understood at all. He would always say that, I'm not a news source because people who are getting the news from me don't laugh at my jokes. They have to know the news already before they laugh. So he understood that people were absorbing news in ways that had nothing to do with the networks anymore through the internet and other places. And by the time they got to his show, they were ready to use the news, and comedy became a way for people to use the news. It was an empowering mechanism as well as just entertainment.
I agree with everything you just said, except that I think he was being a little disingenuous when he said his audience already knew the news. I think some of it did, but I think a good percentage, including many stories I myself first learned from his show, and I pay attention to the news, happened because of the way he conveyed it. And I think when he understood that, he stopped saying, hey, you know, I'm just a comedy guy, I'm just a joke guy. And he started leveraging his position and this unique amalgamation to influence policy, and he did.
Well, in a couple of very celebrated ways, he did that. After 9/11, of course, he had a very particular sort of talk to the nation.
The main reason that I wanted to speak tonight is not to tell you what this show is going to be, not to tell you about all the incredibly brave people that are here in New York and in Washington and around the country. But we've had an unenduring pain here, and unendurable pain. And I wanted to tell you why I grieve.
During the Brian Williams scandal, I remember a very particular talk to the nation. We compare Brian Williams' crimes with the crimes of the Bush administration in Iraq.
Finally, someone is being held to account for misleading America about the Iraq war.
And the media's ignoring of those lies that took place.
Right.
And he had the
wonderful
standing
perspective there. But I'm talking about things like mismanagement of the Veterans Administration.
So over veterans isn't a bug of the program, it's a feature of the program. They took a program that, by all rights, should cost $50 billion to really help people and got it down to $10 billion by just taking out the people it could help.
Things that actually influenced effects, maybe even policies on the Hill.
Guess what, folks? Not 6 hours after we aired that damning piece of investigative jokalism, the VA folds.
Officials say they're relaxing a rule that makes it hard for some veterans in rural areas to prove they live at least 40 miles from a VA health site. The change now measures the trip by driving miles rather than as the crow flies.
In that sense, is he just more like a traditional columnist in the sense that Walter Winchell would go be outraged by something and something would change? That's his most traditional role, being kind of an outraged columnist
but
who also gets laughs.
But that's the amalgamation I'm talking about, because Walter Winchell never got laughs intentionally, as far as I know, whereas Jon Stewart used the laughter to create change. And it isn't as, I mean, comics have done that for a long time. I mean, there have been lots of political comics who want to affect change. But Jon Stewart was something else because he kept introducing information. And he was also, I think, his biggest legacy as a hypocrisy watcher. I always imagine thousands of interns looking at decades of tape in order to find the exact moment when a politician, or many moments when politicians say one thing and then the opposite thing a year, 2 years, 3 months later.
One group in particular, very upset about the influence that money has on our politics.
We must reduce the role of money in politics.
Stem the corrosive influence of money in politics.
The corrupting influence of money.
The unending chase for money threatens to steal our democracy itself.
But the Democrats are outraged, and their outrage is brought to you by money. There's only one problem.
In the 10 Senate races where the most outside money's been spent, liberal groups have outspent conservatives $97 million to $79 million.
There are states where the Democrats are outspending 5 or 10 to 1.
Democrats have realized these are the rules of the game, as much as they profess not to like them.
It's one of those, thou shalt not kill, but if you're going to. Single shot, back of the head, you want a carbon steel hacksaw, then put the parts in several trash bags, spread them out over a forest.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the maybe negative stories that have come out as Jon Stewart's departure approaches. A discussion about the depiction of Herman Cain in the editorial sort of comedy writers' world of The Daily Show became a very bitter fight between an African-American writer and Jon Stewart.
Bills will be 3 pages. If I am president, treaties will have to fit on the back of a cereal box. From now on, the State of the Union address will be delivered in the form of a fortune cookie. I am Herman Cain, and I do not like to read.
Does that say something about the editorial process? Does it say something about Jon Stewart? Does it say something about, you know, something we don't know about The Daily Show?
I don't know what it says, frankly. It could be one writer who was really offended by Jon Stewart making funny voices about people. And certainly he makes funny voices about everybody. I mean, especially comics do that. And comics expect to be able to transgress. But when you're in a position of such influence, then that freedom gets diminished. And I think that's what happened in that case. But I don't know what to think. Wyatt Cenac They've had lots of writers since the days when they were criticized for being purely white Jewish writers.
They've been pretty white though all along.
Well, they've made a real effort to diversify the on-air team, and I think that they've been responsive to it. You start worrying too much about how you make a joke and whether you set a different standard for one kind of a joke or another, and it impedes your movement. So I don't know how to criticize or even assess what happened in that situation.
But you interviewed Stewart before he started
on the big show. I did. I made fun of him.
Yeah.
He was just about to take this new job after having been passed over for a bunch of other jobs. And, you know, we talked about his aspirations. And I think maybe one of the most interesting things, he said that when he was asked what was the most important thing he'd accomplished so far in his life, had he accomplished anything, he said, "I got out of New Jersey."
Somebody asked me the other day, they said, "Do you feel like you've done anything great?" I said no. And then I thought, no, I have. And the one thing I did that was great was I moved from Trenton, New Jersey to New York to try and become a comedian. That's the one thing I've done in this business that's great. Because I gave myself the opportunity to express whatever it was that I thought I needed to express.
And I think that, you know, there he was on the verge of The Daily Show. And I can't imagine how many times he had to stare down fears of new challenges. But he went ahead and he forged a whole new path.
But he said, you know, all those things I really wanted to do, I did them before The Daily Show. So a lot of icing on that cake post-Daily Show.
I guess it must be fun to be Jon Stewart.
Brooke Gladstone, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brooke Gladstone is host of WNYC's On the Media. We polled a few powerful Republicans on Capitol Hill about Jon Stewart's departure and legacy and got a mixed message.
Gee, we're going to miss you, buddy.
No, you're not.
My other comment, I guess, is there's an old country and western song, "Thank God and Greyhound, he's gone."
I haven't bothered to watch.
Republican Senators John Thune, John McCain, and John Cornyn.
This is Jack in Boston. I was just thinking, wow, we all get our news from Comedy Central and our laughs from Fox News. What on earth will we do now to get some clear and genuine content?
I guess you'll just have to fall back on public radio, folks. We're not going anywhere. And on The Takeaway, we have moments of zen every day, sometimes more than one.